Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, the Lakers are winning a championship.
That was a hell of a game, man. They really showed us some of who they are, man. That was a lot of fun.
I consider myself one of the people who wanted to see them play against a good team, show up against a good team, and we actually saw that. Like, Denver, in my opinion, heading into this year, to me, was the best team in the league. Now, they haven't lived up to expectations this year. Nikola Jokic seems like he's eating his feelings. But overall, like, going into Denver has never been easy historically. And then going into Denver and beating a good Denver team is even tougher. And I just want to enjoy that kind of a result. That looked really good. And then you look at Dallas going into New Orleans and beating the shit out of the New Orleans Pelicans. Like, maybe we can rethink some of the strength of schedule stuff.
Oh, Dallas is good, man. Dallas is a legit team. Like, whatever preconceived notions that you had before the season, like, Doncic, you know, I know there are some people that don't like him for whatever reason. Anytime you're putting up 30, 10, and 10, I know it's counting stats and whatever, but, like, you're a superstar. You're a, you know, number one option type guy. So, yeah, Dallas is for real. I'm glad we got a win in their gym. They got a win in ours, and they are a team that we could very well see at some point during the playoffs. But this win – well, but this win is I mentioned in yesterday's show that this was an important game to me tonight because I knew they were going to show up. I knew they were going to want to win. And I think, or I've thought at least, the Lakers were a tier above Denver. I didn't believe that at the beginning of the season. But after watching these first 20 games, I was like, I think the Lakers are one tier above the Denver Nuggets, even though the Nuggets are a second seed team. So if they are that, when they want to win a game against a team like that, they should be able to do it, barring some, you know, somebody gets just crazy hot or some weird outlier thing happening. If they are a tier better than them, even with guys being sick, even with it being in Denver, whatever, they should be able to go in and look like the better team. That's exactly what they did tonight, and it was really exciting to see.
Yeah, they present some matchup problems for Denver. Like, Denver doesn't have a player who can guard LeBron James. They can try it out there, Paul Millsap, but that's not really a great matchup because he doesn't have the lateral quickness to stay in front of LeBron. Honestly, I think at this stage of LeBron's career, if I were designing a defense specifically to counter LeBron, I would have a smaller, quicker player in front of him rather than a big, bulky guy like Paul Millsap. But you know, Denver doesn't really have many options there. They tried Gary Harris for stretches, and that didn't work out very well. Again, they tried Paul Millsap out there, and that didn't work out very well. It was one of those games that you really felt like LeBron said, "Nah, we're not losing this one."
Yeah. And that's what they said before the game, right? If you're going to talk about, like, we don't want to lose two in a row, well, then go out there and don't lose two in a row. Don't talk about it, be about it. And they were about it tonight, man. Like, when they're at their best, it looks like varsity playing JV. Not
they're
just
so
in
big.
Like a basketball skill. They're so big, and they're bigger, faster, stronger, right? It looks like juniors and seniors playing freshmen and sophomores out there.
And but these Denver are legit NBA players.
They're not, man. That's what I mean. Like, this is a remarkable team in terms of how big, fast, and strong they are. When you got LeBron and AD and Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee, that's really where their power and Alex Caruso flying out of nowhere. but that front court, man, they finally asserted their will on the boards too, right? That's something that, like, on paper they should be able to do, but they haven't been great at rebounding. They really cleaned up their long rebounds, which was great to see. But like that, they just exerted their physical dominance over that Denver team. And so even though they give up some probably more open looks from three than you'd like to see, they're able to make up for that with just, they're just so much bigger, faster, stronger.
Well, that's the thing, is that, like, heading into this year, one of the things I was really interested to watch against good shooting teams was, can the Lakers' physicality knock shooters out of their rhythm? And I really felt like last night was an example of their physicality, the Lakers' physicality, really knocking Denver out of their rhythm. And, you know, and it showed up. And the crazy thing is, the Lakers could very easily improve from what we saw.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Danny Green shoots 2 of 12 from the field, 1 of 7 from three-point range. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, 2 of 5 from the field, 0 for 3 from deep. Kyle Kuzma is still not playing very good basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those are things that can improve, that are probably going to improve over the course of the year. So if I'm Denver, I walk away from that game saying, shit, they beat us. Mm-hmm. And can get better.
Yeah, that's the thing about this Lakers team, is that they are further away from their ceiling than most other teams. Like, how long have those guys been together in Denver?
Yeah.
With Mike Malone and the same general core?
Mm-hmm.
You can say that about most of the Western Conference contenders. The Clippers are the only team, and even they have more continuity than the Lakers do.
Yeah.
But, and they've had Doc Rivers there way longer, right? So you got new players and new coaches. I wrote a piece for The Athletic today where it was like, you know, how can we get Kuz on track? Like you said, mm-hmm. man, he's not. He's we're not getting like max version of Kuz. We still went into Denver against a good Nuggets team and not just beat them, but like they were the better team for the night. Like they held them off. It was a 6 to 8 point game for most of that game.
Yeah, the Lakers were clearly the better team on the floor.
Yes.
And Adam and I enjoy texting back and forth with Adam, who we host Locked On NBA together. And I told him I would like to see 7 of these games come June. That'd be fun.
Mm-hmm.
And he said we'd see 4.
He thinks the Lakers sweep him. Adam's a Nuggets guy. If you're not familiar with,
no, he hosts hosts Locked On Nuggets. Mm-hmm. He's one of the smarter people that I know.
Adam's great.
Yeah, and he said we would see 4 of those games. And I
think it goes 5. I think they'd get 1 in Denver, but I do see what he sees there. Yeah.
Yeah. And, but like heading into this year, we weren't supposed to say that this quickly about this Lakers team.
Especially like Denver's good, man. They're like,
they were my favorite. Like that, I thought they were going to be the best team in the West this year by a lot.
Jokic needs to get it together. Like, look, I know that it's part of his charm and whatnot that he's this kind of fat guy, you know, balling out and whatnot.
Yeah, he looks like a Teletubby out there.
But he like, he can't play like that or be in this kind of shape and the Nuggets be what they need to be. Like, I mean, hey, great for the Lakers, right? If it works out that way. But like, he's not anywhere near the shape he needs to be in, even for him to do what they need to do.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick second here. When we come back, we still have a ton of questions to get to. And we have a guest in tomorrow's show. So we are going to have to really fly through these. Are you ready for that?
All right, I'll be quick. Message received, sir.
You and me both. Hang tight. All right. Park Wahlberg writes, "Hey guys, who wins this 3-on-3 full court to 21? Team 1, LeBron, Swaggy P, and Robert Sacre, or Team 2, number 24, Kobe, Meta World Peace, and DJ Mbenga?"
LeBron's team.
Yeah. They made Kobe's team. Like, DJ Mbenga can't be out there.
I mean, he is going against Robert Sacre, to be fair. But
yeah, I guess that is the Spider-Man meme.
I think that, you know, if you're going to 21...
Wait, which meta are we getting?
I think we're getting 24, like, well, if he's meta, right, he's not Ron Artest. We're getting meta, right? And so, like, that's a better player than Nick Young is, for sure. Just that whole time is going to be LeBron going pick and rolls with his buddy Sacre, with Nick Young on the skip pass. And, you can't stop that.
Also, you can't guard LeBron with only 2 other players on a basketball court.
That's right. Yeah.
You can't. There's nothing you can do there. All right. Killmonger 44 writes, "Anthony, I know comparing players across era is of limited usefulness, but do we over or under consider improvements in training today and lifestyle choices, diet and stuff? Did players in the 50s and 60s stay in shape in the offseason? Could Chuck play heavier and Jordan stay out all night because they played against players that smoked or drank? Do players today pull all-nighters, etc. I don't ask to be all TMZ about it, but I think this aspect is underappreciated by those that think this is the NBA, like the NBA's peak is past.
Oh, no, the NBA is better than it's ever been. It's not even particularly close, right? And his point on all of that is true, right? Like that is, and yes, if you were to transport a player from the past, would they be in, I was having this conversation tonight with my brother about like, I remember when the 90s were new, right? Mm-hmm. Like when the ball players of the 90s were getting cussed out and, you know, like, I'd average 50 a game if I played in these days, right? Yeah. So it's weird seeing that twice mm-hmm. in that, like, I remember when the dudes who are now saying that about today's players were having that said about them by the OGs. The reality is that the game, like, these guys are so, so good, and the preparation and the health. One thing that, you know, people are developing is like virtual reality type scenarios. So they've got different programs and simulators where, you know, your point guard can run 500 pick and rolls in his head, right? And or in this machine where he's getting those decision-making reps, right? Like that's where Luka Doncic is really unbelievable, is that like Luka Doncic couldn't be what he is now at age 20 if he was 20 years earlier, right? Because all of the, he's an example of all of the P3 training that he did. He did a ton of that since he was like 15 years old. He's been a professional since he was 15. So think about like his average day versus what the average day of a 15-year-old in the United States is, even if they're an elite prospect, right? He's working on his game all day in very controlled type environments, and there's a lot of advantage in that.
Yeah.
And so, like if those players, if they were to transport into today's game, they'd certainly, you know, be better as a result of the benefit of that.
Michael Jordan's greatest accomplishment was performing the athletic feats that he did wearing like the Air Jordan 1s. Like, I say that kind of in jest, but like there's a serious element of technology that you talked about, the technology in terms of tape and scouting and the things that those guys can do there. But the shoes that they're wearing nowadays are so far in so far advanced compared to back then. And I think that's the most tangible way to explain how far the game has come from then to now.
Think of all of the, sorry, this will be my last point. I know we're trying to do this quickly, but think of all, like what you just said there is true in so many different aspects. Just think of like their airline travel or their hotel accommodations. Just everything is geared toward getting max physical performance. Did you see that video of like the Lakers warming up under Pat Riley when they were in Hana? It was, and they're like jogging around the gym, like, let's do a couple laps and now we're warmed up. Like, it's funny now because they don't do that or anywhere close to that because they want to get the best out of these guys. So yeah, it's way different.
Yep. All right. Trip Before C writes, using the second game of against the Thunder as an example, how can LeBron get more people involved rather than having him holding the ball for 22 seconds and then shooting? I think it's fine when he's hitting, but when he's not, it's just not their night.
I mean, LeBron's leading the league in assists, right?
Yeah.
So he's not all just dominating possessions and getting a shot up. He's passing the ball somewhere in there. Like, there is something to be said for the Lakers running more set plays, whereas right now it's really give the ball to your, you know, LeBron or AD or Rajon Rondo, but that's like 90% of the offense right now. I would like to see them incorporate a little more in the way of set plays. I think that's where you get more Kuzma involved. But as for LeBron, man, he's playing great ball. I don't have a complaint about him.
I would like to see LeBron be featured as the screener more often than he is.
Because, I agree with that. That could be part of the set plays. Yeah.
Yeah. Like LeBron in a short role, I just don't know how you defend it. LeBron gets the ball with a head of steam, full head of steam, and fewer defenders than offensive players in front of him. I just don't know how you defend that. So I'd like to see that, but yeah, I mean, overall, I don't really have many complaints about what are they 17 and 2 or, well, yeah, 18 and 3.
They're 18 and 3, yeah.
18 and 3, yeah. I'm not going to complain much about this team. JNRO9676 writes, love the show, a great listen for those of us who are Laker fans and who also suffer from insomnia. That mean we're putting him to sleep?
Hmm. Did we already get this question?
No, I read you the. Oh, did we?
I definitely read this to you. I'm having major deja vu right now if we haven't.
Yeah, no, I definitely read this to you. Although it's a great line. I still want to know, like, is does this per, like, are we fantastic putting this person to sleep? Fantastic backhanded
compliment, yes.
Yeah, yeah, all right. So, a new 08, Dear Fred and Pineapple Pete, yeah, we have definitely, we are back. I understand Pete's stance on EFF and the the Celtics and forever and can't argue. However, if no, either... No.
I do not accept however's on this, but continue.
However, if either PG-13 or Kawhi had signed with the Lakers, I think we'd have gone from a really good team to a dynasty slash multiple championships. For that reason, and for how lame they were in their process of signing with LA's JV team, those two guys have become my most hated NBA players. Since Pete says podcasts are cathartic, I need Pete to at least call those two snakes his signature term, MFers, for me.
They do not earn MFerhood in the first 20 games of the regular season, sir. I am sorry I cannot grant your request. We will reconsider this. The Office of MFer Applications will reconsider this request at a later date. But for now, you are in the wait pile.
I'll call them motherfuckers. Number two, second question here. People always ask, what traits would you combine to make the best player question? But no one asks, what trait would you take from each player, from each coach to make the Voltron of coaches? Or should we call it the Vogeltron? I.e. play calling, player psychology, motivation, offense, defense, acumen, etc.
There have been a couple of high people questions in this. I'm pretty sure, like, what percentage of our listeners do you think are high at any given time?
I mean, they listen to a podcast with like, me. You have to be high to be able to enjoy.
Yeah, that bumps up percentages a bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're creating Coach Voltron. All right.
If you had to create the Voltron of coaches, right? It's like Phil Jackson's people skills, right?
Yes, command of the room.
That's the number one thing that you add to this. So then from there, how do you build out the coach?
Who's my offensive coach? This kind of goes to the player argument too, in that like the reality is like the current players are by and large better than their predecessors. That's true of coaches as well, right? Like if you asked me this 5-10 years ago, I'd say my offensive coach is probably Greg Popovich, maybe, because I love how adaptable he's been and how he's been able to add motion to spacing concept. But now he plays kind of an antiquated style of basketball. Yeah, it's
so weird. Like he advanced the game and then was like, no, screw all of you
people. Yeah, he was like, fuck it, I'm tired of like, I just want to drink wine and go to awesome restaurants.
Yeah,
and
I can't knock that though.
Hey man, it's a great life if we can get it and get paid millions of dollars to do it. Mm-hmm. But at some point the game passed him up. I'm still going to say Greg Popovich, because one of the things I don't like doing in this type of idea is like, oh, like the game's passed him by, so he's trash. Like, no, he's, you know, one of the great coaches of all time. Defensively,
Tibbs.
Yeah, like he's the guy.
Even his defense, like that.
But it's kind of passed by, right?
Like, yeah.
That's why this is a hard
vote,
because like the game, let's hope the game has evolved. Like the triangle offense won 11 titles and it never really worked anywhere else, not in the modern era, right?
Yeah.
So, but at once upon a time, that was one of the gold standard offenses. So I don't know. I'm rambling because of the difficulties that come with answering this question.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is you're shooting at a moving target.
Yeah, that's it right there.
You're trying to hit the evolution. You're trying to hit on the evolution of coaching, and it's never going to stop evolving.
I will say that Phil's ability to lead really, really, really talented people is the most translatable from one era to the next.
Yeah, I mean that's why I started with his people skills. That's where I would build out from there. I actually, Don Nelson's offensive principles, I think, were way ahead of their time.
Absolutely.
So I think I would probably see if I and also he just seems like a fun hang.
Speaking of high, right?
So I think I would try to involve him somewhere in there as well. Tibbs' defense like really took a hit as offenses continued to evolve. So I don't really know if you can have like a defensive arm to the Voltron here that we're thinking of. Let's take a quick second here, come back and see how high our listeners are.
That's right.
So KCP's anklet writes, Anthony and Pete.
Whatever it is they're high on is quality stuff.
We have the best listeners out there.
We really do. I enjoy the hell out of you guys.
Anthony and Pete, man, it feels so good to have a good Lakers team again. Are you guys concerned with these slow starts lately, though? It appears the defensive intensity has been turned down significantly, and they are playing down to the level of their opponents. In my opinion, this is creating unnecessary additional minutes for LeBron and AD early in the season. What are your thoughts?
It is creating unnecessary additional minutes. However, the next time you are irritated with them for going down, 15-3 to the Washington Wizards or somebody like that, remember how they played tonight against Denver. It is quite obviously a focus thing, and they are 14-0 against those bad teams. When they need to turn it up, this was the first evidence in tonight's game that they can turn it up and pull through a victory against a really good team. Mm-hmm. So that whole thing that's bothering him, and that's a fair point about that it adds more minutes to guys we don't want to add more minutes to, but it's just the nature of the marathon, right? Is knowing when you need to turn it up, when you can coast and still get a victory. So far they've done that. I get what he's saying, but that's going to be the nature of following a good team.
Also, not all minutes are created equal.
Mm-hmm. So, it's like a pitch count for a pitcher, right?
Like, yeah. Like you weren't the Lakers. Like if you're down 15-3 against the Washington Wizards, you weren't out there firing your 98 mile an hour two seamer,
right?
You know. So I agree that and as somebody who has to write recaps for this team, yes, I agree that it's very frustrating, but overall, again, like what I come down to is that they're 18-3, and like especially after this game, like the best point that you made right there was the fact that they just held the Nuggets, who have some of the most daunting weapons offensively in the NBA, to 96 points on the road. Like that's. We can't really complain much with this team.
Yeah, that's it right there, man.
All right, Kinetic Groove writes, I feel like this just gets... Although, we're never going to top KCP's anklet.
Kinetic Groove is, though, it's a different category, right? That's a different brand of highness, right? Like, that's a...
I'd listen to that.
You want to be around that. Yeah, you want to hang out with Kinetic Groove.
Yeah. I'd listen to the shit out of that album. In the Toronto game, the Lakers struggled with their transition defense. How would you rate their transition D now, and what specific areas do you see they still need to improve on, with the caveat that Bradley and Caruso have missed some games? P.S. Pineapple on pizza. Yum. See? Told you. I want to hang out with Kinetic Groove.
Kinetic Groove's still cool with me. I'm going to pretend like that last thing didn't happen. So in terms of transition defense, aside from effort, which is by far the biggest part of transition defense, they don't do a great job of matching up in transition, specifically LeBron and Anthony Davis. Sometimes those guys will kind of run to a spot rather than finding a guy. And some of the open threes that they give in transition or semi-transition are a result of that. It's not just those two, but they can be two of the guiltier parties of that, especially LeBron. But, mm-hmm. By and large, again, I'm fairly happy with what this team is on the defensive end when they want to be. Like, Denver didn't score the last 2.5 minutes of that game that they can, really turn it up at. I don't know, man. I'm encouraged. It's not just the coming off of a good win, but every time I've seen this team really try really hard, except for the first game, they've ended up pulling out the win. And their other couple of losses have been a result of just not focusing and being locked in for enough of the game.
Transition defense is tough to analyze because there are so many moving parts. Mm-hmm. Like that, it's just like one of my least favorite statistics in basketball is defense against the three-pointer. Like, it's random. You're shooting against guys who at best shoot like 37% from 3-point range or whatever. That's the, whatever the average 3-point, you know, percentage is in the NBA. So like defining what is a good or a bad defensive team based off of defending the 3-point line, while it is hugely crucial, is not something that I really delve too deeply into. And I think transition defense is another example of that.
That's fair.
Money Mike H writes, what's up? So what are the chances the Cavs pick up Bronny Jr. To somewhat lure back LBJ for possibly his last season in the NBA? Or what are your thoughts? Do you think he'll want to play with or against his son?
So what was his name again? Money Mike H?
Money Mike H. We've had some
Money Mike H is definitely the dealer in this whole scenario, right? That we're building that all of our listeners are high.
Yeah.
He's definitely where they're getting it from.
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that. I think that's one of LeBron's goals, right? Is to play alongside his son. I mean, imagine that. A father-son combo in the freaking NBA. One of the things that I've got my fingers crossed about long-term wise is that we've been talking about kind of the advancements of the NBA, and part of that is going to be that if you do everything right, you can probably play at a high level for a lot longer, mm-hmm. right? And LeBron's always been the guy who was eating an apple in AAU at age 16 rather than the Flamin' Hot Cheetos that the other kids were eating, always taking care of his body. Is, you know, when we say, oh, LeBron's going to be 35, he's going to be 35 in a couple of weeks now. Does that mean the same thing as it does? Well, when he's 37, when he's 38, will that mean the same thing that it means for other people? I think that he's already shown at each individual age, like being this level of superstar at age 35. How many guys have done that? Maybe Jordan? And I would argue that this LeBron is better than that Jordan was at the tail end of the Bulls run. And that's with more mileage on his legs. So does, you know, if the Lakers are this we treat superstars right franchise and we're going to give you the best opportunity, like LeBron seems happy. There hasn't been a ton of the, like, I mean, you know, 18
especially
and 3.
Not this year.
Hell, right. Like last year was bad, no doubt, in terms of vibe, but it was not like a team that could win a title that was like bickering with itself and kind of eating its, you know, like feuding with Kyrie Irving or something like that. There's no, like, him and AD are really on the same page. So if all of that's to say, if like the Lakers are that and LeBron's happy here, can we get a longer run than we were initially expecting out of LeBron James while he's like a really high level player now? If he's got to go chase Bronny to wherever he's drafted, he's going to go do that. And I respect that. But I do think that, you know, we're a few years away from that. And I do think that the version of LeBron we could be getting is going to be a high-level player.
I kind of wonder. So remember we had that quote from LeBron saying that he regrets naming Bronny or LeBron?
I never heard that one.
Yeah, he basically said that, like, he regrets now looking back naming LeBron James Jr. LeBron James Jr. And I kind of wonder if that's going to kind of paint his approach to LeBron, you know, Bronny James' career if he plays in the NBA. Remember Michael Jordan Jr.?
I do. Who is he? Who did he play in that high school game? There's a high school game where, was it Marbury or Steve Francis? Somebody, like, it was like 39-4. It was like the matchup between like Michael Jordan Jr. and MJ's like in the crowd, like disowning his son in his mind. You know?
Yeah. But I kind of wonder, like, LeBron is a different dude from Michael in that regard, that I think he's more self-aware of what naming LeBron James Jr., naming his kid that means to that kid. And if Bronny actually does make it to the NBA, I wonder if LeBron would kind of take a step back and say, all right, man, it's your time. You know, I just yeah. That would be
like dad coming kind of brings the circus to town too. Although when LeBron James Jr. enters the NBA, assuming that he does.
Yeah, there's no way to avoid the circus.
Right. It's going to be a circus either way, but maybe having LeBron there doesn't allow him to be his own man, Bronny, that is, in a way that if dad wasn't around, he'd be able to. So that's an interesting point of view. I'm curious to see, you know, what LeBron's perspective on that is.
Yeah. All right. Last question here comes from Danny Camelina. To Pete, preferably. So they want your take on this specifically, Pete. What are some ways to increase my basketball knowledge on the game, such as plays? I'm really interested in improving my basketball knowledge, and I admire Pete's work and also yours, Andy. Well, thank you. But.
So in terms of X's and O's and stuff like that, I think people often start too far down the process. I think that the first thing, like if anybody has played music, a lot of times the first 6 months or so of playing a musical instrument is not all that fun because you're learning like scales and different technique. And like, you can't play the song that you really want to play. Basketball is similar in that respect, in that like learn your cuts, learn the difference between a flat angle ball screen and a slot screen or a down screen versus a cross screen, right? And there are all sorts of great resources out there. There's coachesclipboard.net is now I am maybe the okay boomer of Lakers Twitter in some ways, in that this is an ancient site that you will probably laugh at when you log into it. But coachesclipboard.net was a place where, like, when I got my high school coaching job, to make a long story short, I ended up getting the head coaching job. I was supposed to be the JV coach. I got the head coaching job like 2 weeks before the season started. And I was like, oh shit, like, I better like, and so I just crammed, and that really set me off on this journey that I've been on. And a site like coachesclipboard.net was really remarkable. There's, I think, JES Basketball. All of this is like really dry reading, but it's good stuff. Championship Productions has remarkable videos, but they're going to cost you. You've got, Half Court Hoops on YouTube. Coach Daniel does really good stuff. I'm actually working on an idea of doing kind of like an LFR for beginners type stuff, because a lot of times I'll get fans be like, hey, man, you're a good sport, Anthony. You're a good sport. So anyhow, there are resources out there. A lot of them are geared toward like coaches and stuff. And that's why starting at the simplest stuff, learning some of the terminology. And the best thing you can do is like, if you hear me or somebody else who is talking about the game use a term that you don't know, do a search on it, whether it's on Google or on YouTube or somewhere like that. A lot of my knowledge comes from, hey, what's that action? And then it becomes like you find your other friends who are into this stuff, and I'm always there for this sort of thing. There are plenty of other people on Twitter where it's like, oh, hey, what's this play, you know, that they ran at this time in this game? And you just start to build it up. It's not something that happens overnight. It's just this knowledge database that you start to accumulate over time. And for me, it started with a lot of simple websites and YouTube searches.
Honestly, the best thing I could ever advise people to do is to try coaching.
Yes. Like, if you have time for that, that's the best, yes.
Get involved with a team, even if it's just as like an assistant coach or whatever. Just like being around somebody who thinks about the game the way a head coach thinks about the game, and spending time around a team to understand also the human element that is involved in coaching.
If you can go to practices, that's a big thing. Yeah. Going into the human element, along with learning just kind of like the how a coach approaches the, you know, the breakdown drills, the little pieces of what it means to be a head coach.
Yeah, I don't think I could do what I do right now without having been a coach at some point. I don't consider myself, I was actually just laughing, just kind of chuckling to myself while I was watching the Lakers game tonight about the idea of, you know, coaching again and developing a rotation and substitution patterns that don't follow a rotation and trying to balance those things. I was just kind of laughing at like, God, I actually did that at one point and I must have been awful. But like it really did. It made me a lot better at this, whatever this thing is.
Sure.
I also think too, regarding like the intricacies of offenses and there is a level of terminology that I think somebody should probably be at if they want to actually take themselves seriously in this. But just like for me personally, in analyzing the NBA, I kind of started with wider concepts more than I focused on, you know, specific coaching terminology and sets and this and that and the other. It was if you start with spacing as a concept and you kind of build your understanding of the game from there, I think that's going to best put you in a decent spot in analyzing the NBA, because so much of talking about the NBA is about spacing, is about getting the right guys, the right kinds of looks, and stuff along those lines.
Yep.
This was fun. Another good show.
I'd like to thank all of our mellowed out listeners for the great questions.
We've got great questions considering the Lakers just beat the Nuggets.
Yes. Yeah. And those most of those were asked before that happened. So
it was all the stars were aligned. The planets were aligned.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. I get your Denver joke now. My apologies for not. Yes. Picking that up.
The Lakers beat the Nuggets 105-96. It is going to probably be one of their better wins on the season. I'm interested to see how they bounce back right away, you know, less than 24 hours from now against a pretty good Utah team, though they won't have Mike Conley. So plenty of stuff to continue to pay attention to. Tomorrow's show is going to be a lot of fun, too, because I'm going to talk to George Sedano, who hasn't been on the show here in quite some time. So I'll kind of pick his brain about where he thinks LeBron is at. He has a pretty unique thumb on that pulse as well. So a lot of really fun stuff moving forward. The Lakers, I think we can probably just say that they're the best team in the NBA, right?
I think they've got claim to that right now. What, Milwaukee. Milwaukee is the other team that has the a legit. If you wanted to say Milwaukee, I wouldn't have a problem with that. But yeah, man, we're right up there.
The fact that the Lakers are in that conversation right now, where they are, given the lack of consistency and carryover from last year to this year, is pretty spectacular. Pretty great. Yeah. Pretty cool spot that the Lakers are in right now. So plenty of reason to keep on paying attention. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you tomorrow.